record.
Oh, it's a dead section of tape.
This is Dr. Phil Farrell. It is October 29th, 2009. And Dr. Farrell has a couple of things he'd like to add to the tape. So, Dr. Farrell, you go right ahead and add them.
Well, thank you, Ann. After we finished the last session, it occurred to me, as I look back from the beginning of my deanship back to October of 1994, when I began as interim dean, that I went through sort of a roller coaster of ups and downs all throughout my deanship, but the beginning of my deanship was especially intensive and challenging. In fact, the first couple, 3 years probably were the most difficult period in my entire career. It's true that some of the things that happened later with the Blue Cross program were also quite intensive, but that beginning of my deanship, as I look back, was the sort of make it or break it period for me. And as I mentioned earlier, about half of newly appointed medical school deans fail, and most of the failures occur in that first couple of years. So you really have to plan very carefully for how you're going to get through the first couple of years. And one thing I recognized when I started as dean, when I walked in the dean's office and saw that tall pile of mail that hadn't been opened, that the many administrative experiences that I had in a variety of leadership positions before then did prepare me better than my predecessor, because as Larry Martin said, he never liked administration, never did much administration. And so I felt that that was quite an advantage for me. I also had the reputation on campus for being a good administrator, and I believe that that really helped quite a bit when we were facing the challenges of our relationship with the Central Campus Administration, particularly the Chancellor and Provost Office. Our situation was so difficult that I was shocked after about a month in the dean's office. One of the things I learned was that the medical school was on probation for all personnel actions. In other words, it was impossible for the medical school to hire faculty and staff independently, as most colleges and schools do. And the Vice Chancellor for Administration, John Torfey, had imposed this probationary status when he realized how dysfunctional medical school administration was under my predecessor. And also several major mistakes had been made that the state of Wisconsin criticized the Madison campus for in the management of personnel within the medical school. Mistakes in appointments, mistakes in setting salaries, mistakes in payrolling, and there had been some complaints by personnel of the medical school over this over these many problems. And so I realized after a while that the medical school probably deserved to be on probation because of the dysfunctional administration and personnel actions that were so flawed that there were legal actions against the school and the university. And so I discussed this with John Torfey, and in one of our meetings, John said, "Well, I think if you can shape things up, we can lift that probationary status." I responded, "John, I don't think we're doing well enough to lift that probationary status yet. I'd rather we stay on probation, and I'm going to make everyone realize that we're going to have to get up to speed and meet the standards of the campus if we're going to have if we're going to get off probation and have our own independent administration for personnel action." I also spent some time with UW's system leaders on this issue, and I believe I had some discussions with administrators in the Department of Administration, state of Wisconsin, over this the same issue until we determined what we should do to straighten out the problem. Now, one of the decisions I made early to try to not just improve medical school administration, but also to enhance our credibility and our image campus-wide and our relationships with state of Wisconsin leaders, is I made the decision to bring in some new personnel that I could trust and rely on in handling the administrative functions and be more responsive, more immediately responsive to the campus. And the first significant hire I made was to bring my secretary into the dean's office from the Department of Pediatrics, Carla Aiken. She had been my secretary for quite a number of years, about a decade in the Department of Pediatrics, and I was accustomed to working with her, starting out early in the morning, sometime between 5 and 6 in the morning. She was accustomed to starting somewhere around 6 in the morning, and so we were able to get quite a lot done before even 8 or 8:30 in the morning, when most people were starting to work on campus. Carla really carried me through those challenging years, and when we got to the Blue Cross, the intensity of the Blue Cross challenges, she also was an absolutely wonderful asset in keeping us on target. Another person I hired was from the Department of Human Oncology, Patty Mulcahy, to become the new Assistant Dean for Human Resources. I found out that there was no way that the existing personnel handling our human resources administrative functions in the medical school, there was no way that they were going to ever accept the UW-Madison campus requirements and standards. It was just like dealing with a brick wall to try to take the pre-existing human resources office and shape it up. And so I made the decision to, which was a good decision, to bring in a new person. And I'm very grateful that the person we brought in from Department of Human Oncology, in a very, very difficult search in which the search committee was really divided over the finalists, and I had to step in and make the final decision. But I'm really happy that Patty Mulcahy came on board, because Patty by herself was probably more responsible than anyone for getting us off probation for personnel actions, which eventually became critical, because when we got to the point where we wanted to merge with Physicians Plus Medical Group, a 227 doctor private practice group, which occurred about 1997, Vice Chancellor John Torfey had already decided that our ability to manage personnel was absolutely excellent, and he approved the largest hiring in the history of our school or any school or college on the Madison campus, namely an overnight hiring of 227 faculty physicians from the Physicians Plus Medical Group. Now, one of the reasons John Torfey was willing to do that is that he saw how dedicated we were to complying with requirements of Madison campus, and whatever he wanted us to do with those 227 hires, we were quite willing to do. I had brought on board at that point an associate dean for administration, Gordon Ridley. Gordon previously had been associate superintendent for the University Hospital, and he was very accustomed to working with hospital administrators and with physicians. And he took a lot of the responsibility for that particular personnel action and so many others because the top priority that I gave Gordon Ridley when we hired him was our clinical program responsibilities, relationships with hospitals in Madison and elsewhere, like in Milwaukee. And so John Torfey actually looked to Gordon to make some of the key decisions about hospital relationships, hiring the Physicians Plus faculty, and clinical facilities development. One of the other things that John Torfey got involved with very directly was decision making over our facilities development. And John Torfey and Gordon Ridley and I spent many hours together discussing the HealthStar initiative. It actually was John Torfey's advice that led to the downsized final version and Gordon Ridley's hiring of an architectural firm to do the advanced planning that brought the HealthStar initiative proposal forward in a kind of a condition adequately developed that the Department of Facilities Development and Division of our Department of Administration, the state of Wisconsin, was very comfortable with what we were proposing. Same thing happened when we made the decision to place the Health Sciences Learning Center on the east side of the Clinical Sciences Center and suggested to University Hospital that the west side was the better location for future development of clinical facilities. At that time, we realized that there was a big parking lot on the west side of the Clinical Sciences Center, and this might be ideal for patients who would come, who particularly would have special needs and might benefit from the easier access on the west side of Clinical Sciences Center, that is off University Bay Drive as opposed to Highland Avenue, which gets quite congested. So Gordon Ridley and John Torfey and I spent some very productive hours planning not just the HealthStar initiative and the siting of the Health Sciences Learning Center and the Interdisciplinary Research Complex, but also thinking about what else might go in the future. This investment of effort really paid dividends in the final analysis when the possibility of a new children's hospital arose. This became a possibility after Gordon Durzon was replaced by Donna Sullenberger as the hospital CEO and the university hospital authority structure was in place. We realized that if there was any way to generate more space for the hospital and clinical sciences center and further develop the hospital, that a children's hospital on the west side of the CSC, close to the Ronald McDonald House, would be an ideal location. And we convinced Donna in the beginning that the west side was good for clinical facilities development. She was willing to accept the idea, although Gordon Durzon wasn't, of the Health Sciences Learning Center on the east side of the hospital. And Donna made up her mind early in her term as the hospital CEO that she would like to try to develop a children's hospital during her watch. Now, the fascinating thing is most people thought this would be impossible, but I remembered that the same thing was said about the Ronald McDonald House. It would be impossible to develop a Ronald McDonald House. And so what happened is we got some of the same leaders like John Flatt involved in developing the Children's Hospital, people that had been previously engaged in leadership efforts and fundraising for the Ronald McDonald House. And with the leadership of Donna Sallenberger and the funds that she was able to commit from the capital budget of University Hospital and some great fundraising, a lead gift from American Family Insurance, it was amazing that something that we could only dream about for the entire history of the Department of Pediatrics suddenly became a reality, namely constructing an absolutely fantastic freestanding, somewhat independently operating children's hospital, something that Madison has always needed something that the children of Madison and the children referred to the university have always deserved. But just to go back to those first few years of my deanship, I believe now that all of the groundwork was laid with the campus and with the State Department of Administration, Division of Facilities Development, et cetera, to be able to do all of these construction projects, which added up to about $500 million of total construction during my deanship. I don't think any of this would have been possible if we hadn't been able to turn around the administrative problems, the malfunctioning administration of the medical school in that period between 1995 to 1997. So in essence, what really happened is those first 2 years for me, which is the make it or break it period for most deans, turned out to be, in retrospect, the most critical and productive period of all, because it sort of set the stage for everything that was to follow. Even the Blue Cross Blue Shield program involved the same people working together, my secretary Carla, Gordon Ridley, John Torfey, all working together to try to make this happen. We really benefited from our relationship with the University Foundation and the leadership efforts of Mark LaFave, who traveled the state of Wisconsin with me when we were attempting to finalize the commitments for the $300 million Blue Cross Blue Shield gift. In fact, it was Mark who told me that during my time as dean, close to $1 billion of fundraising occurred, all things considered. And Mark pointed out that the way we did this was the old-fashioned way, by meeting with people, raising friends, and then raising funds by getting out in the hustings, as he used to say, and spending time with people who could be friends of the medical school as time passed by. And finally, I should say that Mark was on board when I started as dean. In fact, he was engaged by Larry Martin and clearly had something very special to offer a new dean like myself. His knowledge of friend raising and fundraising really was very, very helpful to me, and all throughout my deanship we worked as partners together raising the funds for all these construction projects and reorganization efforts. And so I must say that I have some advice for future leaders of the medical school, and that is to get off the ground with a running start, hit the ground running. Your first 2 years may determine the success or failure of your entire deanship. Certainly it can determine failure, because as I said, most deans who fail in the first couple of years, but and that's basically what happened with my predecessor, who didn't hit the ground running. But in my situation, that first couple of years really was the time that set the stage and made it possible for everything successful that followed thereafter. And I think that's as I look back, the biggest lesson I learned in my 11 or 12 years as dean.
Dr. Farrell, do you want to talk some about the money for the Children's Hospital? You mentioned a lead gift from American Family. Would you like to tell us how much that was?
Yes, I think the first commitment was for $10 million, and then it went to 15, and I think eventually it became about $20 million from the American Family Insurance Company. They wanted to name the hospital the American Family Children's Hospital. We just absolutely loved this name. There were a few leaders that objected. One of our distinguished faculty objected. I remember him saying, this is going to be bad for the Department of Pediatrics, for a distinguished department to be working in a building named after an insurance company is going to be an insult in the future. And a couple of other people didn't like the sound of it. But from the beginning of time, Donna Shalala, and I totally agreed with her, thought that this is wonderful. It's going to be a family-oriented children's hospital. American Family Children's Hospital is pretty hard to beat as a name. So, and they certainly deserved, with that kind of a gift, to have their name on the building. Now, Donna herself committed capital funds that totaled up to somewhere around $35 million, maybe more. This is money that the University Hospital Authority Board approved, and it's part of the regular capital spending activity of the University Hospital. It's an increment of funding. But the reason Donna wanted to do this is that she wanted to make sure that the majority of the money was accounted for, taking the hospital capital funds and the American Family Insurance Company's gift would give us the majority of the money. And then the fundraising effort that came from the founding families giving $1 million or more each, and other kinds of fundraising activities took us over the top. And another thing that Donna was really wise about is she designed this hospital so that it could be expanded. And it wasn't long after we started using it that we already were short of space. And so expansion involves putting operating rooms in and more inpatient bedrooms. We have a wonderful site for this American Family Children's Hospital. It's ironic that it would be so close to the Ronald McDonald House, but you literally could throw a stone from the Children's Hospital roof over to the Ronald McDonald House. It's just amazing. Of course, it's a beautiful vista through the Unitarian, past the Unitarian Church to the Ronald McDonald House. So that turned out to be a real blessing for us. And as I say, the many of the leaders for the Ronald McDonald House project, like John Flatt, became the leaders for the American Family Children's Hospital. This wouldn't have happened, though, without Donna Sullenberger. I think Donna had some ulterior motives. For example, by building the Children's Hospital, we cleared out several wards, equivalent of three modules, 30,000, 35,000 square feet of space within the Clinical Sciences Center. Space that's really needed for treatment of adults. In other words, the University Hospital, the Clinical Sciences Center, was severely short of space for taking care of the expanding clinical programs serving adults. And that's one reason why it made good sense, if you were going to move any inpatient program out of the Clinical Sciences Center, it should be a program serving children. And so I know that Donna had that on her mind, and that space that was vacated from the Clinical Sciences Center will be serving adult patients that have very serious life-threatening diseases that are also diseases that are generally well covered by third-party payers. Cardiovascular disease, neurologic, neurosurgical problems, cancer, etc. And so the University Hospital generates more revenue over time as a result of clearing out the old pediatric wards and constructing the new Children's Hospital. It also enabled the University Hospital to take care of a problem with emergency medical services by sort of linking together the emergency department for children and the emergency department for adults. And another thing is the building was designed with an integrated parking plan so that parents of sick children can pull right up to the hospital, right up to the door, and either drop off their child or just pull their car up and have valet parking take care of their car while they go in with their child. This would be impossible on the east side of the Clinical Sciences Center, although we do have valet parking there now. You can't bring a sick child right to the door on the east side, whereas on the west side, it's just become part of the culture now. We put a nice drive-up circle drive in the front of the hospital, and we have this hospital really looking westward, so you get beautiful sunsets there, and it's just absolutely perfect. It's interesting, when I was chair of pediatrics, I was asked if there was any way we could build a children's hospital someday. Just like I was frequently asked, is there any way we can have obstetrics back at the University Hospital? And I used to say to both questions, I just don't know how this is would ever be possible. It looks impossible. But when Donna brought up the idea of a children's hospital and sort of sketched out the strategy she had in mind and some ideas about funding, I just was absolutely thrilled and told her I'd do whatever I could to try to help accomplish that miracle, that dream come true. Incidentally, I would have to say that every one of the buildings we constructed during my time was funded by multiple sources, many different sources. Basically, the funds needed for these construction projects were just patched together. Usually there was some big lead gift, like the one that Tommy Thompson, I shouldn't say gift in the case of Governor Thompson's commitment, but some big source of money came through that made it feasible. And then on top of that, we added varying size gifts and grants. But every one of these buildings would have been impossible with state funding alone. And I knew that when I became dean, and my predecessor didn't really appreciate that. He wanted a couple $100 million from the state. I knew that would be impossible. But on the other hand, if you can get something like a third of your cost covered through a lead gift or contribution, generally you can get construction projects completed in a reasonable period of time. So I think we learned our lessons along the way that made a big difference when we got to the Children's Hospital, which in essence is a lot like the Ronald McDonald House project. Something that was thought to be impossible suddenly became a reality.
Great looking. I haven't been in it, but it looks wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
All right. This well, thank great. You, Ann.